How do you work ethically when stoking limitless human desire is one of your everyday tasks? This time on Culture File, the second part of my interview with Jeremy Till, head of Central St. Martin's London and co-author of a new essay come manifesto, The Design of Scarcity, which looks at what artists and designers might have to contribute to a post-scarcity world, a world where the manipulation of desire might no longer be about creating objects that inspire ever-increasing consumption.
Desire at the moment is marshalled by the marketplace. So desire is simply tied up within issues of consumption. I desire to consume more. I desire that object of consumption. And what we're saying is that we need to, you know, rescue desire from that very that stranglehold of a very limited understanding of what it might be, and to place it within other forms of desire, desire for better ways of living.
Tell me more about a desire for a better way of living and how a designer could inspire that.
Practically, how do you go about that? Is to just interrogate endlessly the way in which scarcity is constructed, and then to try to intervene in that so that, you know, an example we use in the book is one of Newcastle, New South Wales in Australia, where the city centre was completely empty because there were really stupid legal and zoning and planning requirements about the use of space. And all that Newcastle did, Marcus Westbury did, was to go in to understand what was constructing that scarcity, what was constructing the scarcity of access to space. And it was very simple. He just understood it was a legal framework. He's an artist, but what he used was his imagination to unlock all those systems, and then in unlocking what constructed the scarcity, he made an abundance of space available to artists and the creative types. Now, it's a very direct example, but I think that it's a good example because it shows that you're always kind of burying down and down and down to try to find what constructed the scarcity in the first place, and then to intervene imaginatively. What's happened recently, particularly in the architectural field, is that they've become pretty much reduced to designing facades for the spatialization of capital. So what I mean by that is that buildings effectively have become spreadsheets in which you extract as much value out of the plot of land as possible, whether it's housing or offices or whatever, and then you dress it up with nice facades in order to get it through planning. And that means that the whole role of the architect has been severely diminished. Architects are bound to the regimes of austerity. They have become one of the means by which you can keep extracting more out of less, by which you can, and therefore they become a cover for some of the things that are going on at the moment. There's an interesting Dutch critic called Wim van Toorn who talks about fresh conservatism. And what he means by that is that architects in Holland in the early 2000s were kind of wrapping up and producing these fantastically kind of wild, avant-garde, fresh forms, but actually they were leaving the underlying forces of conservative forces of capitalism completely unscathed, and in doing it in an avant-garde manner, but by doing them in a fresh manner, it made those forces look fresh themselves.
And that is the story of Apple, that is the story of the design-led commodity process.
Yeah, which is why designers do need to think pretty hard sometimes about what they're doing and about what their purpose is. So if their purpose is simply to produce more desire, then they probably have to ask questions of themselves. We need to think really hard about what is the role of the designer, which is a deeply political question. It's not simply an aesthetic question. We need to get back to those questions And I think that's what we're trying to do at Central St. Martin's, that we're not talking about products as things of beauty. We're talking about products as part of a social process which has a beginning and an end. It's a strange conundrum we're in as much as the creative industries are the only expanding industries within the UK at the moment. They are the second biggest industry after finance. And yet art and design schools seem to be in some way pariahs. It's clear that standard models of thinking are failing us. It's called 2008. It's called the crash. It's called business schools. It's called the poverty of economic thinking. And so what alternative models of thinking have we got? And I would strongly argue that the alternative models of thinking we've got are emerging from places like this. They're not emerging from philosophy departments because they still tend to have a degree of abstraction about them, whereas designers and artists are always working with the here and now. Inevitably, they're working both with their hands and their minds. These forms of thinking expand way beyond the designs of cups and saucers or nice paintings to hang in galleries. They actually are to do with the way that we may rethink, you know, the future society. And designers and artists have, I think, a huge role to play in that. So it's not just about an economic argument, the creative industries, though that is important, clearly, but it's about a more ambitious thing, which is how do artists and designers contribute to the debate about societal futures? The recent programs that have been and articles about the art school have mythologized a period of art history of in the 70s, which actually, if you talk about most people who were there, it was full of drunken men. It was incredibly unprofessional. You might get one or two. And inevitably, there has been, in the expansion of the art school, there's been more and more bureaucracy, more and more kind of accountability, et cetera, and more professionalization of it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's suppressed imagination, which is what the mythology of the 70s is it was kind of pure creativity. I don't believe in that.
But part of the problem maybe was accepting this role in the creative industries to immediately say the balance sheet will be part of what we're talking about, and that might be the beginning of a problem for the sector, for art schools in general.
Yeah, it may be. If you are tied simply to the words of the creative economy, but I think that what one sees within, particularly in London, within the relationship of art schools to the creative industries and the creative economies, they're being reinvented the whole time. Our students aren't there in the service of the creative industries. They become the creative industries themselves very quickly. So it acts in a rather different manner than, say, a business school. If you come out from a business school, you are going into the service of the market economy. You're trained to do that. I don't see the creative economy as this monolith which we have to serve. I see it as something which we are creating. I would hope that what is happening is that those values are always being thrown up into the air.
Jeremy Till there in his book, The Design of Scarcity, co-authored with John Goodbon, Michael Klein and Andreas Rumpferber, is published by Strelka Press and is available from strelka.com. Next time on Culture File, we'll be having an adult swim into the world of outsider comedy.